We're holding up the Mishnah on Yud Tes Amud Beis. Previous Mishnah, we talked about Rego and details of it, and now we're going to talk about Shein. Mishnah says, "Ketzed Hashein Mu'edas." How is Shein Mu'ed? Where we said in the previous Perek that Shein is one of the things that's always Mu'ed, meaning that there's no Chatzin Nezek versus Nezek Shalom, no matter how many times it does it. Lechol said, "Roila," when the tooth of the animal eats what is suitable for it, meaning the kind of things that an animal would normally eat, or not so normally, as we'll see in the Gemara, but in other words, at least that it's not something that's way out of the ordinary for it to eat. Here also, by the way, we have, just like at the beginning of the Perek, we had Tosfos parse the sentence differently, where all of this is part of the question. And the answer is the same way as we had with Regel, so it is with Shein over here also, where Tosfos would understand it that way, and Rashi understands that Ketzed Hashein Mu'edus is the question, and Lechol Osaroilo is the answer. Anyway, the Mishnah continues, HaBehema Mu'edus Lechol Peres V'Yirokos. A wild animal is Mu'ed to eat fruits and vegetables. We talked about the other day in the Gemara that the first words, Ketzed Hashein Mu'edus, would be referring to a wild animal, and HaBehema Mu'edus would refer to domestic animals. Anyway, continues the Mishnah, Ochol Ksusai Kelim, if the animal ate clothing, or Kelim, Mishalim chatzi nezek, then the owner pays chatzi nezek, because then that's not something that the animal eats. So therefore, that's mishuna. That's something unusual. And as we've been learning, mishuna is considered part of keren and therefore pays chatzi nezek. Continues the Mishnah. Amed von Mamurim. When is this talking about that you pay? When is this talking about? But reshus hanizek only if it was in the reshus of the nizek. So the animal went in there and ate something. But in Rosh Hashanah, you would be potter because, as the pasuk says, the animal goes and grazes in someone else's field, and Rosh Hashanah is not someone else's field. Whether this line over here, when it says, when it says, Bamed Vonamurim, the Gemara is going to discuss whether it goes only on the, whether it go which of the two cases in the Mishnah does it go on the part about it eating what's roi for it, or also on the din about the clothing and the kalim. That we'll see in the Gemara, two different opinions. Anyway, continues the Mishnah. The Imnenis, now, however, if the we're saying that you're potter in Rosh Hashanah, however, if the animal had hana from what it ate, Mishalamas Mashanenis, then you do pay for the hana. Meaning, in other words, so let's say, for example, it was grain or something that the animal ate, grain, straw, or whatever, some kind of food that's normal for this kind of animal to eat in Rosh Hashanah. So fine, you can't be mechayev him for shein, but on the other hand, the fact is that you, the owner of the animal, have hana because now you don't have to feed the animal next time. So you're paying for that hana. This would be an example. Now in the Gemara, we're going to start talking about the concept of zen nen of zelay chaser. Here it's zen nen of zeh chaser. You, the owner of the animal, are gaining from the fact that now this animal ate something and you don't have to feed it as much next time. On the other hand, the other person lost out because the animal ate its because the animal ate his peiros or whatever it is exactly. So you don't have to pay. So even though, so given it's in Rosh Hashanah and you're not having to pay for you're not having to pay for regular shein, but you do have to pay for the hana. But what does that mean? Kate said, we'll see in the Gemara what that means exactly. Basically, what it means is you don't consider the value of the actual thing it ate. You consider the value of an equivalent amount of the more of the plainer food that you would usually give that animal. We'll see in the Gemara the details about that. Kate said, Mashalemis Mashananis, continues the Mishnah. How do you pay what it had hana? Meaning not how, that we'll be discussing in the Gemara, but what does that mean? When are you paying Mashananis versus Mashahizika? So for example, suppose that the animal ate something that was sitting in the street, Mashananis, then you're only paying for the hana. But if it ate from the sides of the sides of the Rechava are not really the Rechava itself, is more the area where people are constantly coming and going. That's Mishusaram. Sidi HaRachava would be more like the side areas. The Me'iri defines them in more specifically. It means you think of, let's say, for example, nowadays, you often have that stores will have, you have a sidewalk in front of the stores. And to a certain extent, the storekeepers use that area as kind of an extension of their store. They'll put out racks with magazines and other things over there, for example. They'll put shopping carts or whatever there. So that kind of thing. It's not like the storekeepers own the area. They can't prevent Bnei Rosh HaSarabim from going in there when there's crowds in Rosh HaSarabim, because it doesn't belong to them after all. But practically speaking, they use it as kind of an extension of their store. So that would be Tzidei HaRachava. So if the animal eats from that, Meshalem es Mashe Hizika, then you are paying the actual Hezek itself, because that's considered to be Rosh HaYachim for that purpose. Even though, as a matter of Halacha, it might be considered Rosh HaSarabim, as a matter of Shabbos, rather, it might be considered Rosh HaSarabim, but in terms of these Halachas, it doesn't count it as that. It counts as Chatzar HaNezek. Similarly, if the animal ate from what was in front of the store, by the entrance of the store, mishalemus mashananis, then you pay only mashananis because that's considered Rosh HaSarabim, mitoich hachanus. But if it eats from within the store itself, mishalemus mashahizika, then you pay for what it actually damaged, namely the full payment, because that's already Rosh HaSayachid. We're going to see in the Gemara on Daf Chafala, if we'll get into the details of what that means exactly, the inside versus the front of the store versus the inside. Where is the animal standing at the time? We'll end up discussing that in the Gemara. Okay. Obviously, by the way, the reason why the Mishnah had to bring this whole matter of Nenis and so forth is because by Shein, there's Hana. By Rego, there's no Hana, so it's not relevant whether what the animal stepped on is something that you, the owner of the animal, are not getting any Hana from the fact that it stepped on something and broke it, so therefore that didn't come into play over there, only here when we're talking about Shein. Okay. So the Gemara starts off. Hashein mu'edes lechol saroy laketzad. What does this mean? That Shein is mu'ed to eat what is roy for it? What's considered roy? For example, behemah shenichnas al chatzar hanizak. An animal goes into the property of the nizak, which is where we said that you chayev for Shein. Va'ochla oichlan har oyma, and ate their foods that are normal for it to eat. V'shasa mashkin har oyma, or it drank drinks that are normal for it. Mishalom, Nezek Shalom, then the owner is paying Nezek Shalom, because that's classic Shein. V'chein chaya shenichnas al chatzar nizek. Similarly, a wild animal goes into the chotzer of the nizek, the tofa behema v'ochla basar, and it killed an animal and ate the meat. Mishalom Nezek Shalom, then he's paying Nezek Shalom, because again, that's normal for wild animals. As we've learned at the end of the previous perek, you can have, for example, a lion where it's less normal for it to do that, because we said over there, a lion usually eats its prey alive. So therefore, if it kills it first, then it's considered Mishuna. But for other kinds of wild animals that we mentioned over there, wolves and bears and Baudelus, however we define Baudelus and so forth, then we said it's normal for them to kill their prey first. So therefore, that's a normal thing, and therefore Nezek Shalom. So the Gemara continues. Now, what about, the Braisa continues. What about if this is something which is not always normal for the animal to eat, but it will eat it in a pinch? This is called Achila al Yedei Hadchak. So, for example, Parah She'ochla Sa'orin. If a cow goes into somebody else's Rishus and eats... if a cow goes in and eats barley, where normally a cow doesn't eat barley, that's usually, Rashi points out, something that you would usually give a donkey to eat. As we find in various places, you have, for example, the Surah Sashas refers over here to Chulin, where you have the example of a Pinchas Ben Yair's famous donkey, where they gave it barley and it wouldn't eat it because it wasn't Meiser. So we see that barley is a normal thing to give to donkeys, but not to cows. But nevertheless, a cow will eat barley if it's really hungry and there's nothing else available. Similarly, chamor she'ochel karshinin, or vice versa, if a donkey eats karshinin, which is a type of beans that are normally given to cows. Again, even people sometimes will eat these karshinin in a pinch. It mentions in various places in Shas. But for our purposes, what's important is it's usually what you would give cows. It's not something you would usually give donkeys, but they will eat it in a pinch. Similarly, the kelev shall lick it as a shemen. If a dog licked up oil, v'chazir she'ocha haticha shel baser, or a pig ate a a piece of meat. So all of those are things which are slightly unusual, but not so unusual. Mishamen nezek shalem, then the owner pays nezek shalem, because even though it doesn't usually eat them, but it will eat them. Ayidat chak, so therefore it's still called poet of Rory. Tosfos points out, based on other Gemaras, by the way, we do find pigs will eat meat, even lachatchila, but that's talking about when it's soft. The Gemara brings, for example, in Psachim, a case of a case where a stillbirth of a baby that was born dead, Rahman al-Tzlan, was thrown into a pit. And if there are pigs around there or other creatures like that, then we assume they ate it. Because and therefore there's no problem with tumah v'tahara, because they're there, it's soft meat. Here we're talking about tough meat. A pig will eat it, but only b'shas adchak. So amar papa hashda de'amet kol mila d'lav urche v'ochlay adyad chak shmei achila. So now that we're establishing, based on this b'raisa, that anything that an animal doesn't usually eat but does eat adyad chak is still considered eating, and therefore you chayiv nezek shalem. Then Rav Papa says, here are some more examples. If a cat eats dates, where again it's not normal for a cat to eat dates, but it will eat them if there's nothing else available, or if a donkey eats fish, those cases also meshalem nezek shalem. Then you pay nezek shalem because it eats them b'shasat chak. Now Rashi makes the point. Now we said in the Mishnah, what about ksus v'kelim? The fact is, even b'shasat chak, an animal is not going to eat ksus v'kelim, it's not going to eat clothing or kelim. Oh, I guess when we're talking b'shas adchak, we're not talking about literally like the starvation times, like during a siege or something, then people or animals will eat anything. We're talking about, under more normal situations, where just you forgot to feed your animal that day or something. It's not going to eat ksus v'kelim, but it will eat but it will eat things that it might not normally eat. Okay. So the Gemara tells a case. It happened once that a donkey ate some bread. He also broke the basket. Rashi brings two explanations of palse. One is he chewed on the basket, and the other one is that he split it. Either way, the point is he damaged the basket that the bread was in. So now Rav Yehuda required the owner of the donkey to pay nezek shalom for the bread, because that's considered that's considered normal for it. So that's shein. As far as the basket, he made him pay chatzi nezek, because that would be keren, because it's not usual for an animal to damage or to chew on baskets. Rashi points out, now, this took place in Bavel, because Rav Yehuda was the Rav and Rosh Hashiva of Pompidissa, as we learned a few weeks back in Kedushin. So therefore, in Bavel, you don't do Dine Knossos, because you don't have anybody who has the original smicha, Ishmi Pi Ish, over there. So necessarily, we have to be talking about over here that the Nizek had grabbed a hold of the property of the Mazik to pay for it, and then, as we've learned before, the halacha is that then he gets to keep it. So in other words, when we're saying that Rabbi Yehuda said that the Mazik has to pay Chatzi Nizek, really what it means is he said, you Nizek can keep what you took and use it to pay the Chatzi Nizek. Anyway, the Gemara asks, Va'amai, now why? After all, if it's normal for the animal to eat the bread, isn't it also normal for him to chew or split the basket that it was in? Especially if he can't easily get the bread out of the basket, then he's going to break through it to get the bread. Why shouldn't he be chayiv nezek shalom for that as well? And the answer is the ochel v'hoder polis. What we're talking about over here is first the donkey ate the bread, only then did it start chewing on the basket. Well, that already, once it ate the bread, why is it chewing on the basket? Therefore, that's chatzi nezek. But the Gemara asked to pass uchehu. You're telling me it's normal for a donkey to eat bread? Or a minu? I have a contradiction, though. A braisa says, ochla pasu bosu v'tavshil. If an animal eats bread or meat or tavshil, a cooked dish, meshalem chatzi nezek, then you're paying chatzi nezek. My lab behema. Now, presumably, that braisa is referring to a domestic animal, and we're saying that's not normal for a domestic animal to eat bread. So the Gemara says, loy b'chaya. No, the braisa is talking about a wild animal. I said, what do you mean, chaya? Bosser uchehu. We said before that for a wild animal, it's normal to eat meat. So how can you have a list over here of three things: bread, 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 meat, or tavshil. Well, meat at least is perfectly normal for a chaya to eat, as we've said before. So if the braisa is talking about a chaya, then what do you mean? So the Gemara answers a few possibilities. Dematri, the braisa may be talking about when the meat is roasted. A wild animal will eat raw meat. It's not that you're usually going to eat roasted meat. The very same of a tavia. A second possibility is, you know, when you're saying wild animals, don't just consider wild animals to be lions and wolves and things like that. Consider, after all, a deer is also a wild animal, but a deer is a plant eater. It doesn't eat meat. So if a deer were to eat a piece of meat, whether raw or roasted, that would be mashona for it. So yes, the braisa could be talking about chaya, but not a predator chaya, but rather a chaya like a deer that's a herbivore. The barisema la ulam bebehema, or you can answer another answer. After all, the braisa may be talking about an animal. Ah, you're asking. So in that case, what do you mean that's not normal for it to eat bread? Or bipsoda, because we could be talking about when the bread is on the table and then the animal grabs it off there. So that would be mashuna. It's not normal for the animal to grab food off the table and eat it. So therefore, that would be considered mashuna, and therefore that would be called chatzinezek. The Rabbeinu Chananel has a different girsa, not bipsoda, which means a table, but rather psoisa. Meaning that the bread has been broken up into pieces, into chunks, like croutons in soup. So then it's certainly not normal for an animal to eat that. If it had been a regular loaf of bread, then sure an animal might eat that. But here you're talking about where it was made into croutons, like to put into soup. That's not normal for an animal to eat. So therefore, if it does, then that would be chatzinezek. So again, in our case over here, where the donkey ate the bread and then broke the basket, the bread itself, since it wasn't on the table according to Rashi, or broken up into chunks and put in soup like Rabbeinu Chananel, then therefore it's normal for it to eat it, and therefore Rabbi Yehuda made him pay nezek shalim for that. Okay, another case. The Gemara says, "Hahu barcha." There was a barcha. Rashi translates barcha as a goat. Rabbi Nachmanel says maybe, or it might instead mean a ram, whatever. The chazal lifta puma de dana. It saw a turnip sitting on top of a barrel, and it wanted to eat the turnip. Sorich solik, so it climbed up the side of the barrel. Achle lifta, and it ate the turnip. The tavri de dana, and also it broke the barrel without intending. So Rava made the owner of the animal pay for both the turnip and for the barrel nezek shalim. And my timer, why nezek shalim for both? Given to urche lemecha lifta, because since it's normal for the animal to eat the turnip, that's certainly a normal kind of food that an animal will eat if it gets a hold of it. Therefore, it's normal for the animal also to climb up to get to the food. So therefore, that's not anything mishuna. So you'd have, in other words, he's chayev nezek shalom for both, because there are two different obvious nezikin over here: shane for the turnip and rego for the barrel. Okay, the Gemara continues. Omar Ilfa, behema b'shus harabim. Suppose that an animal is standing in b'shus harabim, u'poshtat savora v'ochla me'algabe chaberta. It stuck out its neck and ate something that was on the back of another animal over there. So you have Reuven and Shimon's animals over there. Reuven's animal is carrying a load of food. Shimon's animal comes over and reaches on top of Shimon's animal, or Shimon's animal reaches on top of Reuven's, whatever, and takes some of the food that it's carrying and eats it. So then Ilfa says, Chayevis, then the owner of the animal that ate is going to be Chayev, meaning we don't consider that to be Shein b'Shus Harabim. Because my time, because when it eats off the back of the other animal, it's considered like the chotzer of the nizik. We have learned earlier in our Masechta, and we learned back in Kedushin as well, that it's the an animal is not considered a chotzer for all purposes. You can't be koina something just because it's on the back of your animal. But for this purpose, Ilfa is saying the back of the animal is considered the nizik's chotzer, and therefore, so now it's not Rosh Hashanah anymore. Therefore, the one who ate the owner of the animal that ate can be chayim. So the Gemara says, Lema Messiah, can we say that we can support Ilfa's din with the following braisa? Suppose a person is standing there in Rosh Hashanah and he has a basket slung behind him. And with food in it, and an animal stuck out its neck and ate from what's inside that basket, chayeves, then the owner of the animal is chayev. So that would be exactly like what Ilfa is saying. This also took place in Rosh Hashanah, but because it ate out of the basket, then it's considered Rosh Hashanah. The answer is not necessarily. Just like Rava says in another case, which we're going to quote now, that it's talking about where the animal jumped. The same way over here could be that it means that it jumped. Now, what does that mean? So there's two ways basically of understanding what this kefetzes means. One is that it means that the animal jumped up to get the food. The very fact that it jumped up is considered unusual. So it's one thing, in other words, we said before about the case with the turnip and the barrel, where it is normal for the animal to climb up. So therefore you could still distinguish, in other words, you could distinguish between the animal having to climb up versus jumping up. So the jumping up itself would be unusual. This is how Rashi learns. The Balamur learns similarly. So we're talking about it's not normal for the animal to jump up the chlal, and therefore that alone makes it not shein, but rather a different av. Therefore, it becomes a different av nezikin. Instead, it becomes keren, and therefore, when we say chayeves, we mean chayev as far as the usual thing, chatzin nezik if it was a tam, and nezik shalim if it was a nezik shalim it was a mourn. Many of the Rishonim disagree with that, and they say that no, the same way as we said with climbing up the barrel, it's normal. The same way for an animal, the Pnei Yeshua also points out there we were talking about a goat. For a goat, it's very normal for it to climb up or to jump up to eat. Here, the Gemara would be talking about another kind of animal, but that's how the Pnei Yeshua fan for Zrashi. But many Rishonim don't hold of that distinction, and therefore, so they explain it depends. Is it something where the animal could have eaten it when it was walking normally, or is it that the only way to eat it is by jumping up or whatever? So that would be the distinction. If it could have eaten it normally and instead it jumped up and ate it, then that would be regular shein and shein b'shosarabim yipotter. But if the only way for it to get it was by jumping up, Then you would be chayev because that would be considered rishus anizik, because not so much because it's mishuna, but because the whole heter, the whole fact that the Torah says you don't have to pay for shein rishus rabim is only when like this. Why is what's the logic behind shein being potter rishus rabim? Is because you have every right to take your animal in rishus rabim. You can't be expected to watch it all the time to make sure it doesn't do its normal things. But here, where it's jumping up and eating, that's already. It's not Karen, but nevertheless, it is unusual enough that you still could have prevented the animal from doing it, and therefore that you can be chayev. So according to many Rishonim, that's the distinction, whether it could have or not, whereas according to Rashi and the Baal Amor, the distinction is whether it did jump up or not. Anyway, so Rava is saying kefetzes, so therefore the same way the Braisa may also be talking about kefetzes, which therefore wouldn't necessarily prove Ilfa's point. We haven't disproved Ilfa either, of course, but you could say the Braisa is talking about that, and therefore that it doesn't necessarily support Ilfa's point. So the Gemara says, Vaheicha itma de Rava, what was the original context in which Rava's din was said? So aha, in connection with the following din. The Amar of Oshia, Behema b'Shus Rabim, when an animal is in Rishus Rabim, Holcha v'Ochla Ptura, if it ate as it's walking, then the owner is Potter. Amda v'Ochla Chayeves, but if it stopped, if it stood still and then ate, then you would be Chayev. So the Gemara says, Maishna Holcha de Urchehu, Amda Nami Urchehu. Why? What's the difference? Whether the animal eats, whether it's walking or whether it's standing, either way, it's normal for it. And the answer is Amar Rava, but Kefetzes, that was the original context where Rava said that it's talking about where the animal jumped. In other words, Amda v'Ochla doesn't mean that it, the word Amda in Lashon Kodesh can mean to stop, but it can also mean to stand up. So in other words, we'd be talking about where the animal stood up on its hind legs and ate. And so in other words, that would be the case of Kofta. So therefore, we're talking about that it stood up on its hind legs and jumped. And therefore, that would be, so again, according to Rashi and the Baal Amor, the point is that makes it Mishunah. That makes it that now what it did is not Shein anymore, but rather Keren. And Keren, Yuchayiv and Rishas Rabim, whereas according to many of the other Rishonim, what we're saying is because it couldn't have gotten the food except by Kefetzes, then therefore, that's enough reason to be mechayev that it can't really be considered exclusively Birshas Rabim anymore. It has to be considered. It has to be considered chatzara nizah. Within that, you have a good deal of discussion. Or do Ilfa and Rav Oshia agree with each other's dinim? In Ilfa's case, after all, he didn't talk about where the animal was jumping. He talked about where it reached out with its neck and ate off another animal. Would he then agree with Rav Oshia? Or would it actually be that the two of them are, or would it actually be that the two of them maybe are disagreeing because in Ilfa's case the animal's not jumping, whereas in Moshe's case, Rava is saying that we are talking about that it had to jump. So you have a lot of discussion about that, and also b'chlal, does this din apply any place in Rishas Rabim, or only if the food was located in a keli of the nizek? The example, the brisa that we just brought before in connection with Ilfa, after all, mentioned that the person had a basket slung behind his shoulders, and then the animal ate from it. So would a similar din apply? Let's say you have something higher up on Rishas Rabim. Let's say you have on a ledge on the wall or something. So it's not in the nizek's keli. But again, the animal can reach it only by jumping up. Would that be considered? Would that still have the rule of kefetzes where you're chayev, or would we say that since it's not in the keli of the nizek, then maybe you're not chayev? So you have a lot of discussion about all these kinds of details. Okay. The Gemara continues, Boy Reb Zera, Misgalgal Mahu. Reb Zera asks the question, what if something is rolling? So the Gemara says, Heichidam, what do you mean? Suppose you have a bundle of straw that is located in Rishos HaYachid, become Misgalgal V'Osi in Rishos HaYachid V'Rishos HaRabim. And now the animal is rolling and dragging the food from Rishos HaYachid to Rishos HaRabim, and there it ate it in Rishos HaRabim. So what would be the din? Would we go according to where it was, or would we go according to where it ate it? Well, it ate it in Rishos HaRabim, therefore your potter. Or would we say, since it took it from Rishos HaYachid, then therefore we should say that he's chayim? Rashi explains the question really the other way around as well. If the animal started out Rishos HaNizek, and grabbed a bundle of straw that was in Rishos HaRabim and brought it in Rishos HaYachid, you'd have the same question the opposite. That's how Rashi learns the case. Tosfos doesn't like that for a number of reasons. For one thing, we learned the other day, and we're going to learn in a couple of more days, Bez Hashem, about that case with the dog and the loaf of bread that was baked on the coals, where it took the bread and went over to a stack of grain and ended up burning it, etc. So there, you have it's taking it from one rishus and eating it in another rishus, and we're saying yuchayev. So Tosfos explains that no, what we mean by scowgal over here is the thing was rolling on its own. So to begin with, you had, let's say, so the bundle of straw or whatever it is was located in Rishos HaYachid. It on its own was rolling towards Rishos HaRabim, and it would have ended up in Rishos HaRabim if nobody had stopped it. Meanwhile, now the animal goes and eats it. So the animal goes and eats it before it ever gets to Rosh Hashanah Rabbim. So the question is, would we consider as though it was in Rosh Hashanah Rabbim already because it would have gotten there without the animal interfering, or would we say that it's considered Rosh Hashanah Yochid in Rosh Hashanah Nizek and therefore Yochayim? So that's how Tosfos explains it, and then you have a couple of other explanations of Rishonim as well of what's going on over here with this case of Misgalgal. The Ravid gives an example. The Ravid gives a case, in other words, that it started eating it in one Rishus, and then meanwhile it rolled it into the other Rishus and continued eating it. So do you go according to the beginning of the eating, or do you go according to the end of the eating? You could also have a case, he says, that it can also be where the animal is standing in Rosh Hashanah Rabbim and grabs something from Rosh Hashanah Yochid and eats it in Rosh Hashanah Rabbim. So do you go according to where the animal is standing, or according to where the animal, or according to where the payers were? They have a variety of different explanations. Anyway, so that's the question. So what would be the din? So the Gemara says, Toshma, the Toni Reb Chiya, Masri Miksasi Bifnim, Miksasi Bachutz. Reb Chiya taught a braisa that says that if you have a load of animal food, part of it was inside in Rosh Hashanah Nizek, and part of it was outside in Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, so if it ate it inside in Rosh Hashanah Nizek, then you'll be p'chayev, and if it ate it in Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, then you're going to be potter. My love, misgalgav asi. Presumably, Reb Chiya's case is talking about exactly our case, where it's being rolled from one place to another. So if it ate it b'fnim would mean that it brought the whole thing and rolled the whole thing inside, then it's kayev. And if it rolled the whole thing outside, then you'd be potter. So you go according to where it was eaten. And then again, according to the various other Rishonim, you'd have the different other possibilities. So according to Tosfos, for example, what it means is that when a thing is rolling from one Rishus to another, naturally there's going to come a point at which it's partly in one Rishus and part in another. And even though if it continued rolling, it would end up completely in the other Rishus, nevertheless, we're still saying that if it eats it bachotz, it's potter. So the answer is no. Loi. No, you could say what the braisa means is that actually when the animal ate the produce, it depends. Whatever was still located inside chayeves, then it's going to be chayev, even though it ate it in Rosh Hashanah Rabbim. Al mashav achutz p'tura, but whatever it took from Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, it's going to be potter, because in other words, maybe fakev, maybe you go according to where it took it from, and not where it actually ate it. So what you have to begin with, whatever part of it was located outside. So you have this bag of grain, let's say, exactly on the dividing line, and part of it was inside, part of it was outside. So whatever was outside, you're going to be potter because it's in Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, and whatever was inside to begin with, you're going to be chayev because you would go according to where it took it from, regardless of where it ate it. So you can't prove one way or the other from that braisa. Another possibility is that Reb Chiya is referring not, let's say, to a bag of grain where some of the grains are completely inside and some are completely outside. Rather, he's talking about, let's say, a bundle of aspasta. Aspasta is a type of straw, type of stalks of grain that they would use to feed animals. And it's very long. Psila, Rashi points out, it's called that because it's long and skinny, like a wick. But the point is, in other words, it's a long, skinny bundle. Every single piece is partly inside and partly outside. So when the animal grabs a hold of one end of it and starts eating it and schleps it into the other side, therefore you can consider it as if it's all in that Rishus, because to begin with, after all, part of it was located in that Rishus. The question would be, though, still, as far as, for example, barley, where some grains of it are completely inside or some are completely outside. So then, and without the animal moving it, you wouldn't have that the ones that were inside wouldn't automatically be outside, or vice versa, unless the animal moved it. So uh, So then the question would be whether you go according to where the animal ate it or where it was located to begin with. So according to Tosfos' explanation, the vote would be that since the stalks are long, maybe we should go according to where the majority of any stalk was most of it inside or was most of it outside, and we should go according to that. And therefore they were saying that's the question. And then again, according to the Raiva, the question would be again that it started eating it in one Rishus and then rolled it into the other Rishus. So we're saying that you could say specifically by a spasta, you have that question again, because to begin with, all of it was a part of every stalk, similar to what Tosfos is saying that part of every stalk to begin with was outside, where it was inside or outside. But you would have the question as far as things where you have smaller units. So the Gemara leaves the question open, and that means, in other words, that it's a suffix. Okay. We said in the Mishnah, ochloksus, we said if the animal ate clothing or kalim, then you're paying as though it was keren, because of chola. So now the question is, now when the Mishnah continues with the v'cholu, it says, b'med v'ram amun, b'rshus ha-nizek, but b'rshus ha-rabim, you would be potter. So the Gemara says, hey. Which part of the Mishnah is that part, the Bamed Varam Amurim, referring to? Is it referring only to, is it referring about the case where the animal is eating normally and saying that you potter for that in Rosh Hasharabim, but if it ate the Ksus or Kalim, then you would be Chayav even in Rosh Hasharabim? Or does it mean that even Ksus or Kalim, you'd be potter in Rosh Hasharabim? Omar Rav Akulu. So Rav says it refers to everything. It refers to both cases. My timer, call a mashana, because when you have somebody did something unusual, in this case, it's unusual to put your ksus or kalim in Rosh Hasharabim. So you put it over there. Or va'acha v'shinaboy, somebody else did something that is also unusual, namely somebody else brought his animal and ate it. It's true, it's not normal for an animal to eat ksus, but it's not normal to put the ksus there in the first place. So to that extent, so you potter for that. So in this scenario over here, then we would say that the owner of the animal would be potter. It was ksus or kalim, and it's unusual. Yeah, but you had no business leaving your ksus in Rosh Hasharabim in the first place. Now, Shittim Kubetzis brings from Rabbeinu Ephraim that it's one thing if it was food. You did something unusual by putting the food there, but on the other hand, you can't say v'acha v'shinaboy, because it's perfectly normal for an animal to eat food. On the other hand, you were talking about ksus v'kalim, so there's really two shinuyim. The owner of the clothing did a shinui by putting it over there. The owner of the animal also did a shinui by eating it, because an animal is not normally going to eat ksus. So therefore that would be a reason to potter him.
That would be considered kerudim.
Well, that's the thing. So that's what Rav is saying. Because to begin with, if it was something that you didn't do anything wrong, you, the owner of the clothing, didn't do anything wrong, then yeah, the owner of the animal would be chayav for keren. But here, you yourself did something wrong, and leaving your clothing in Rosh Hasharabim, and therefore you can't be mechayav the owner of the animal where the animal also did something unusual and ate it. Yeah, that's Rav. Shmuel says no. When the Mishnah is distinguishing and saying Rosh Hasharabim, your potter is only when it ate fruits and vegetables. But if it ate clothing or kalim, then you're going to be chayev, because that would be keren, and it doesn't matter this kolah, this kolah mashan. So the Gemara says, "V'chein amar shlokish akulu." Similarly, you have machlokes between a shlokish and Rabbi Yechanan. Rish shlokish says, like Rab, that the statement "Bamed v'ram amum b'shus harabim" is referring to all the cases of the Mishnah. And in fact, va'azda Rish shlokish l'taimei. And in fact, Rish shlokish is going according to his own shita. Do amar shlokish, because Rish shlokish says something that we're going to learn in the next parak. Shtei poris b'Rishus HaRabim. If you have two cows that are located in Rishus HaRabim, achas revutza v'achas mahalachas. One of them is lying on the ground, which is unusual for an animal to do in Rishus HaRabim. Usually, if your animal is lying down in Rishus HaRabim, you need to get it up, especially so other people or other animals don't trip over it. You don't want to create a burr over there. The other one is walking normally. The one that was walking kicked the one that was lying down. Then the owner of the one that kicked is Potter. I isn't kicking a tolda of Keren, and he should be chayev. No, this is an example of Palamashano Vacha Vashinaboy. You did a shinui in the first place by leaving your animal lying down in Rosh Hasharabim. Therefore, the other person's animal also did a shinui by kicking it, but nevertheless, that would be kolam shano v'achav shinaboy. Then he's potter.
You can't say he's laying down because he's sick. Well, he's hurt.
Even if it is, you, the owner of the animal, have a responsibility to get it up as soon as possible. On the other hand, revutza b'mahalachas chayevus. But on the other hand, if the animal that was lying down kicked the one that was walking, then he'd be chayev because it had the. You can't say kolam shano v'achav shinaboy. The one who's the animal that's walking has every right to walk there. There's no shinui. Tosfos also adds, now in that case, if Rish Lakish is saying both of these dinim based on the same principle, why does he have to say both dinim? You could say one din and we could infer the other one from it. So Tosfos says no, because it's one thing that as far as ksus, as far as the clothing, as the Gemara is going to point out in a minute, within Rabbi Yochanan's opinion, we can say sometimes people do put their clothing down there a little bit while they're resting. So therefore, you could argue it's not such a shinui.
But he's standing next to him.
Maybe, maybe not. But the point is, and even if it does, fine. The fact is, the animal came and ate it. And let's say, where it ate it before you had a chance to react. The Shlokish has to tell us he doesn't hold of that concept. As far as the case of the two cows is, the chiddush of it is that, as we're going to learn when we learn this din in more detail in the next parak, that if the animal that was walking tripped on it, then you could, and got injured, then you could say it's potter. Because, you could say, why did it have to walk Davka there? It could have walked on the other side. Could have walked on the other side of the street. We'll learn about that later on Daf Lamed Beis. But the point is, only because the animal that's walking there kicked the other one, are we saying it's potter? But if Huzka, if it had gotten damaged by it, then it would be then the owner of the lying down animal would be potter because he could say your animal didn't Davka have to walk right there over mine and trip on it. So again, we'll learn that more on Daf Lamed Beis, but the point is that Rish Lakish, there's a chiddush in that din of Rish Lakish's, and if we couldn't have just said the din of Ksus, then we would derive from that.
So it comes to a bar, you say that a person is not going to be mechoyed because he can see where he's going.
Yeah.
When it comes to an animal, you say...
Because even with an animal, actually, the Gemara is going to point out later on in the Masechta, in the fifth parak, when we get into more of the din of a bar, it's going to talk about over there a normal, healthy animal during the day, you might also be potter for bar. Shouldn't the animal see where it's going and then notice that there's a bar over there? So we'd have to be talking about where the animal is somehow not able to see it for some reason.
People around it.
Yeah, people around, it's dark, the animal is blind, whatever it is, yeah.
I was going to say, if he's the same as animal laying there,
right.
Maybe, you know.
Yeah. Okay. The point is, anyway, that Rish Lakish is... Rish Lakish agrees with Rav and says then that an Or Mishnah, when we're saying you potter in Rosh Hashanah, means both cases. If the animal ate Peiros v'Yerokos, which is normal for it, you potter because that's Shane, and Shane you potter in Rosh Hashanah. If it ate Ksus v'Kalim, fine, that wouldn't be Shane, it would be Keren. However, in this case, the possibility of the Keren was first made possible by the Shinui that somebody else did, putting his Ksus v'Kalim in Rosh Hashanah, and therefore you potter. That would be Kol Mashana Ovacha v'Shinimbar.
He said it is normal to put down for a few minutes the rest.
That was according to Rabbi Yechanan, but Rish Lakish doesn't agree with that svara. So Rabbi Yechanan Omer, Lo Shonu Elok Peiros V'Yerokos, Rabbi Yechanan says, like Shmuel, that the din in our Mishnah is talking only as far as fruit and vegetables, because that would be Shein and Shein Yepotim and Rishos Rabim, Avok Ksus V'Kelim Chayevus, but if the animal ate clothing or Kelim, then you'd be Chayev. So the Gemara says, "Leimer Rabbi Yochanan Leslei de Rish Lakish Afilu B'Shtei Paris." Does that mean that Rabbi Yochanan would disagree with Rish Lakish's din, even in the case of the two cows? Does he disagree with the whole concept of Kolam Shano V'Achav Shinaboy? And in fact, by the way, later on, we're going to learn later on in our perek, the Gemara is going to bring this case again, and we're going to have an opinion of Rava that's going to say over there. Sure, the walking animal has every right to walk there, so you can't be mechayev it if it ended up injuring the other animal by stepping on it, but you can be mechayev if it kicked it. Rava disagrees with Rish Lakish's din. He says if it kicked it, you will be chayev because the owner of the lying down animal can say, sure, your animal has the right to walk over mine, but it doesn't have the right to kick it. So that's Rava, but here we're saying, does Rabbi Yochanan not hold of this concept of kolam shana, shinim boy, etc., at all? And therefore, he'd say that even if it kicked it, he'd be chayim. Because apparently, if he's saying that you're chayev for eating ksus for kelim v'rishos harabim, it sounds like he's saying that you don't hold of this kol mashana over achav shinaboy. The Gemara says lo la'olam islay. In fact, no, you could say Rabbi Yochanan does agree with that concept. The difference is ksus abdi inchi demanchi glimi umatmachin. Sometimes it happens. People put down their clothing v'rishos harabim and stand or sit there for, and when wait there for a little while to rest up. So therefore, that's not considered mashuna. But for an animal, it's not normal for an animal to lie down in Rosh Hashanah, and therefore that would be more of a shinui, and therefore Rabbi Yochanan could agree with Rish Lakish that in fact in that case you were the owner of the animal that was lying down, even if the other animal kicked it, Rish Lakish is going to say he's potu because that would be called a mashanu of Acha Mashinu. Okay. Now, next, the Mishnah had said, we said that if the animal ate something in Rosh Hashanah, normal things, payros v'yirokos, so whatever, and the animal had hana, then you're paying according to the hana. We said you're not paying for the full value of the food, but you're paying a lesser amount because, after all, you're gaining from the fact that now you don't have to feed your animal. So the Gemara says, v'kama, how much are you paying then? Rabba Omer Dmei Omer. Rabbi says you're paying the value of a bundle of straw. So let's say, for example, the animal ate barley. So now you could say, you know what? Fine, it's true that barley is a normal food for this animal. It's a donkey, let's say, and as we said before, donkeys do normally eat barley. However, I wasn't going to bother feeding an expensive food like barley. I would have fed it cheaper food like straw, and therefore he has a valid argument, and therefore he would say, says Rabbah, that he only has to pay the value of an equivalent amount of straw. So we would figure out the animal ate a pound of barley, for example. So instead, you're paying the value of a pound of straw. That's a point of Rabba. Rava Amad Dmei Sa'urim Bezoil. Rava says you do pay the value of barley, but you pay the cheaper amount. So because the cheaper amount, it actually says, based on a Gemara in Bava Basra, is two-thirds. We find in other places in Shas also where we consider Bezoil, when you're talking about the cheaper price of something, is two-thirds. The idea being that, let's say, so this guy might say, yeah, I wouldn't have fed my animal barley. But on the other hand, we tell him, says Rava, look, if you had an opportunity to buy barley at two-thirds of the price, at a 33% discount, you would have bought it and given it to your animal, no? So in that case, that should be the amount that you have to pay. And the Gemara says, in fact, Tanya Kavasei de Rava, Tanya Kavasei de Rava. As a matter of fact, we have brises like both of them. Tanya Kavasei de Rabba, Reb Shimon ben Yechoyim, in Mashalam is Elad Mei Omer Bovad. In a Brisa, Reb Shimon ben Yechoyim says that you only pay the value of straw, so that would be like Rabba, that you're not paying the value of barley at all, but rather the value of an equivalent amount of straw. Tanya Kavasei de Rava, on the other hand, we learn a Brisa, like Rava, where the Brisa says, where the Braisa says im nenes mashalemes mashenenes, we're saying that if the animal had hana, then you're paying according to the hana that it got. Ketzad, what does that mean? Och l'kav ekabayim, suppose the animal ate a kav or two kavim of barley, let's say. Ein oimrim mishkeshalem dmeyen, we don't say it should pay the full price. Ela oimnim kama odim rotel lahachal behemdoi. We evaluate how much a person would be willing to spend to feed his animal dover haroi law, something that's suitable for it, even though it's not the usual thing he would give it. So again, usually this guy would give his animal straw, but if he had an opportunity to buy barley at a discount, he would, and give it to his animal as an extra treat. So therefore we can make him pay for that. Lefichach, therefore, based on that, ochlochitin. Now, by the way, this rule applies not only to barley. It applies, you know, we've said before that if the animal eats something that it wouldn't usually eat at all, but it'll eat in a pinch, then we also have the same rules. So it would be, for example, let's say, for example, as far as animals eating fruits and vegetables, you could have, we're not talking about barley, we're talking about, for example, some kind of very expensive fruit or very expensive vegetable. Still, you're going to have the same rules. So the Gemara says, therefore, the Braisa continues, based on that, if let's say the animal ate wheat, which is not something that it has hana from, because wheat with pastures, because wheat has gluten in it, and animals can't tolerate gluten. You know, you have people who have gluten intolerance and have trouble with it, and animals the same way. So
that's their food.
No, they eat barley, we're saying, not wheat. Barley doesn't have gluten. Anyway, so therefore, if it ate wheat, or dover harala, or something which is bad for it, ptura, then you would be potter, because now you can't say mishalemes mashananis, because there's no hana from that.
Then why did it eat it for?
Then why did it eat it? Okay, because it thought it was something else. But you can't say that you, the owner, have hana from it, because the owner, because the animal didn't really get any nutrition from it. Okay. I mean, even within that, Mephoshim point out, let's say the animal was already full when it ate, and it just overate. You can also potter the owner, because he would say, you know, I already fed my animal. I didn't have any extra enough from this overeating that it did.
Depends. If he ate on drop is one thing.
Okay. All right. So now the Gemara is going to talk about. So we're saying that when the animal eats something, then something in Rishos Rabim, then you're paying according to the Hana. Now, when you think about it, like we said in the Mishnah, that's a case of Zen Nene v'Zeh Chaser. The one person is losing out because his Peiros were eaten. On the other hand, the other one gained because his animal ate something. Now we're going to talk about the related case called Zen Nene v'Zeh Loi Chaser. What if you have one person is gaining, the other person is not losing anything? What are the chiyuvim in that? So it starts off. Omalei Rav Chista v'Rami Bachama loy habis gabon ba'ursa b'tchum. Rav Chista says to Rami Bachama, you know, it's too bad you weren't by us last night in the tchum. Rashi says two explanations. One is that tchum means partially you weren't close enough to be able to come to the Beis Medrash and discuss things with us. The other possibility, Rashi says, that tchum itself means the actual Beis Medrash. Whatever the case, he's saying to Rami Bachama, it's a pity you weren't here. We were discussing, we were asking and discussing a case in the Beis Medrash about something very, about a very important point.
We see this word used as a Beis Medrash out of place in the Gemara?
So there is actually another place in Shas where Rav Chisda uses this expression also to Rami Bachama. There's another place in Shas, and in different places Rashi or Rashbam explains that Tchuma can mean the Beis Medrash. Anyway, it would mean like the tchum, like the boundary where Torah learning is taking place. Anyway, so Diboylon Mili Malyasa, we were discussing over there very important points. Omar, so Rami Bachama asked, my Mili Malyasa, what were these very important points? Omalei, so Rav Chisda says, we were discussing the case. Hadur b'chatzar chaveda shalomi daitoi. If somebody lives in somebody else, if somebody squats, basically, in somebody else's chotzer without his knowledge. The question is, tzorech lahalos le'schar or ein tzorech? Does he need to pay the other person for the use of the property, or does he not? So the Gemara says, hey, chidami. What's the scenario? Ilema b'chotzer de l'kaim l'agra. Are we talking about where the chotzer itself is not normally going to be rented out? Because, let's say, for example, the Shlomo Sadeshin explains that it means, for example, the owner is rich and he doesn't need the extra rental income from it, so he doesn't bother renting it out. Or another example would be the Shlomo Sadeshin says no, that's not what it means, because the fact is he still has the option to change his mind anytime he wants. He means, for example, let's say that there's nobody is interested in renting this kind of place. It's out in the middle of nowhere, let's say, for example, and nobody's interested in renting. So therefore, it's anyway going to sit empty. So if you're talking about that case, the gavra deloy ovid lemegar, and you're talking about that the squatter there is not somebody who usually rents because he has another place to live anyway, he doesn't need to live here, or Rabbi Hananel says a different point as well, he's a very important person, and when he comes into town, he doesn't need to rent a place because everybody wants to put him up. Anyway, so if that's the scenario, so then it's zel loy nen and zel loy choser. In that case, then the one is not having hana because he could have lived someplace else just as easily. So he's not gaining any hana from this that he wouldn't have otherwise gotten someplace else. The zel loy choser, and the owner of the choser is not losing anything because he wasn't going to rent it out anyway. So then that's not the, so what's the question about that? Ella b'chotzer the kaima la'agra v'gavra over the meger. Are we talking about where the chotzer could have been rented out, and this guy usually would have rented someplace else, and now instead he decided to try to live here for free? Well, then zen nana v'zechotzer. Well, then you have he's having hanah, the other one is losing. No question he should have to pay because the other guy could have easily rented it out to somebody else. So the answer is loy tzricha. The chiddush is b'chotzer the loy kaima la'agra v'gavra over the meger. What about you have the chotzer itself is generally rented out, but the chotzer is generally not rented out again, because let's say, for example, it's the kind of place where people are not usually interested in renting it, but this person who's staying there is somebody who normally, if he hadn't found this place to stay, if he hadn't found this empty apartment, he would have had to rent someplace else to stay. That's zen nana b'zeloi chotzer. So my. Can the squatter say, look, I didn't cause you any loss, because either way you wouldn't have been renting it out? Or maybe the owner of the chotzer can say, the fact is you had hana, and therefore you should have to pay for the hana that you got. Yeah, that's something else. So we're going to talk about later on if there was damage to it, but yeah. So now Tosfos points out a couple of things in this regard. One of them is you could have what about the other way around? You have a chotzer that is met. What about the opposite case where the chotzer is normally rented out, but this person is not somebody who normally rents, either because he's rich and has a place of his own, or because other people would put him up for free anyway. Tosfos says in that case, you could say that he's potter as well, because again, then there's loynen. Other Rishonim disagree with it. The Hagoyis Hagura points out that the Rif and other Poskim disagree and say in that case he would be chayav. Anyway.
Can you take someone's property that could be used or rented and just hang out there?
Well, so that's the thing. Tosfos is learning that in fact he would be potter because there's no loynen. You can't have. You can't make him chayav unless there was a nene. And here there's loynen because he doesn't need to rent such a property.
Obviously, he's there. So
he's there, but he could have easily been someplace else, and therefore you can't. Therefore, Tosfos says you can't be mechayev him. But the many, many other posts can disagree with that. Yeah. Anyway, so Omalei, so that was the question. So Rav Chista says that was the very important point that we were discussing in the Beis Medrash last night, and it's too bad you weren't there. So Rami Bachoma says Omalei Masnisini. What's the problem? There's a proof to this from a Mishnah. So Rav Chista says, "Hey Masnisin, which Mishnah?" Omalei, so Rami Bachoma answers him, L'chita shamish li, I'll tell you when you serve me, when you do some kind of service for me, then I will tell you. You have to realize, by the way, you find in other Gemaras that Rav Chista was Rami Bachoma's Rebbe, and he was actually his father-in-law. We have in Baba Basra that Rav Chista's daughter married Rami Bachoma, and later on Rami Bachoma died or divorced her, and then she married Rava. So
the story said
that, yeah, they have the story where he asked her when she was a little girl, which one of these two Talmidim do you want to marry? And she says both, and Rava realizes there's a nevuah in it because children have a degree of nevuah. So yeah, so here Rami Bachoma is Rav Chista's son-in-law and his Rebbe and his Talmud, and still he's saying this. Why is he saying this? So there's a couple of interesting points that Achronim make. The Maratz Chaya says, listen, we know that a Talmud has to serve as Rebbe. We know how loymedem dover echam mechaber. If you learn one thing from somebody else, you have to call them Rebbe. So therefore he's saying, when you serve me, like when you serve me, even with a minor thing, showing that you want to learn this from me, then you'll be my Talmud and I'll teach it to you. Reb Shimon Shkup makes a different point on it. He brings from his brother-in-law an explanation. When you have something that you need to deeply delve into and understand very, very well, the Talmud has to have an emunah. He has to have an emunah that his Rebbe knows what he's talking about and that he's much greater than him. Otherwise, if the Rebbe says something that the Talmud finds strange, then the Talmud doesn't say, no, he doesn't know what he's talking about. So therefore, Rami Bachoma wants that Rav Chista should show that degree of bittul to actually serve him. And that way, even if he doesn't understand, then he's not going to say he doesn't know what he's talking about. He's going to go and work. He's going to go work in Fartifzich to try to understand.
The Mishnah,
well, we have to figure out how the Mishnah proves this point. I mean, Rav Chista knows the Mishnayas, but how does the Mishnah prove the point? So shokol sidrei korach le. So sure enough, Rav Chista took Rami Bachoma's sudr, which is his scarf or his turban or something, korach le, and he folded it for him. Omalei, so Rami Bachama says, our Mishnah, im nenes mishalemes machinenes. We see that you have to pay for the hanah that the animal had. So you see that zen nen, you see that the case that you have to pay, that you have to pay when zen nen was ele chaser. However, Omar Rava, kamalei choli v'lei ma'ugesh gavra demari saye. Consider how a person who Hashem helps him out, like Rami Bachama, look how much how confident he can be. He doesn't need to worry about what might happen to him, that he might not make it through, because here we see that Rami Bachama was given siyata d'shmaya. Even though the case of the guy living in somebody else's chotzer was not exactly like our Mishnah, nevertheless, Rav Chista was satisfied with the answer. After all, the case of our Mishnah, if then the owner of the animal has hanah because he doesn't have to feed his animal, and the other one was chot, the other one was chosir because he lost the thing that the animal ate. In the case that we're talking about over here with the empty apartment, with the empty chotzer, we're talking about zen nen of a zeloi chotzer. So it's not exactly the same thing. Still, the fact that Rav Chista accepted it means Rami Bachama was given special siyata d'shmaya that otherwise Rav Chista would have told him it's not, that would have shlugged him up and proved that it's not a proof. So the Gemara says, but Rami Bachama, so what is Rami Bachama? What doesn't he realize that obvious distinction? He says, no, stam peiros, the Rosh Hashanabim, afkuri mafkir lahu. In general, when a person leaves peiros and Rosh Hashanabim, he's mafkir them. Now, not mafkir them completely, Tosfos points out, otherwise there's nothing to pay. What it means, he's sort of miyayish from them. He figures the fact that they're in Rosh Hashanabim, people or animals are going to step on them, etc. So therefore, he's figuring that it's not even going to be worth mashananis. So therefore, in effect, you have zen nan of zele chaser. So because he's figuring these payers that I left in Rosh Hashanah are as good, are goners anyway. So therefore, you can still consider it zen nan of zele chaser. Whereas Rava is pointing out, it's not really an ironclad thing. And therefore, Rav Chista could have asked on it. And it was special siyata d'shmaya for Rami Bachama that he didn't.
Yeah, but what's about this case where he had used the chaser and, you know,
so then that's what we're going to continue discussing now in the Gemara. We're going to continue discussing. We're going to try. That's what we have to figure out. The fact is, it is Zen Nana, but on the other hand, it is Zelei Chaser. So we're going to discuss. We're going to continue discussing. By the way, there are cases where we say that Zen Nana is Zelei Chaser. Tosfos refers to over here. There are even cases where Koifin al Midas Sdoim. There were even cases where not only we say you don't have to pay, but we force the other guy to do it, because otherwise it would be Midas Sdoim to not do it that way. So Tosfos discusses there's a distinction. After all, on Omer Aleph, Tosfos points out, one thing is, if to begin with he tells him, you can't live here, then the person has no right to do it. When we say, Hador b'chatzar chaveru shlemidaito, we mean it's kind of a b'dievedika thing. He lived there, and later on, the owner of the chatzar finds out that he was there. He had never told him in the first place, no, you can't be here, get out of here. Once he does, then he has the right to do that. So that's not, so therefore it's not kofin amidas doim. So the cases of Kofin Amidas Sdoim are where, to begin with, he doesn't have the right to prevent the other person from doing it. And actually, in Shulchan Aruch, it explains the distinction slightly differently, that it depends whether he himself would have had a Hanah from doing it the other way around. Like this was saying, he, after all, could have used the Chotzer for his own purposes, and instead, therefore, this other guy was squatting over. So there are a lot of dinim in it. So we'll go a little further over here and learn a couple more of the proofs. But the end of the discussion is gonna continue into tomorrow's daf. Anyway, so the Gemara says Tanan. Let's look at a Mishnah in Bava Basra and see if it fits with what we're saying. The Mishnah says over there, Hamakif chaveira mishalosh ruchosam. If one person has fields on three sides of the other one's field. So you have the diagram here in Rashi, where you have Shimon's field in the middle, and you have on three sides of it are fields that belong to Reuven. The goder, so the shoni vas, ashniya vas, ashlishis, and Reuven fences in the first, second, and third sides. Ein mechayvinoy, so we're not mechayv Shimon to pay anything towards the expense of those fences, because not really gaining him anything. His field is still exposed on the fourth side, so Reuven can't tell him, look, you're gaining from the fact that I built a wall around your field, and therefore you should have to share in the expenses, because Shimon can say, I haven't gained anything. Before, the field was open on all four sides. Now it's open on one side. What does it help me? Implying horavius. Now the implication would seem to me that if Reuven fenced in the fourth side, then Shimon would be chayev. So Shmamina Zenena was Alei Chosur Chayim. That would be a case of Zenena was Alei Chosur. Shimon is gaining from the fact that there's a fence around his field now. Reuven is not losing anything because Reuven either way would have wanted to fence it in. So we're still, the implication is that Shimon is chayev to join in the expenses. So why don't we say in the same case where the person is Dor B'chatzal Chaveh? And the answer is shiny hossam. The difference is over there, there is actually a chosur. Because Reuven can say to Shimon, at garamta li hakei for yisera, because of you, I had to do an extra fence around. Meaning, in other words, so Rashi explains that if your field wasn't in the middle of mine, then I wouldn't have needed an internal fence between my field and yours in the first place. All I would have needed is an external fence around the edges of my field. So now, because your field is in the middle over there, that requires me to put up a fence that makes it more necessary to put up a fence to distinguish between my field and yours, and therefore there is a certain chosser over here. And by the way, the halacha in this connection is when you have zenen, zelei chosser, if there is even the slightest bit of chosser, then already you can be responsible for paying your full share. So here, in other words, if Shimon's field had not been there,
he would have border.
Like this, Reuven has a field, he needs a fence around the edges of it. But he's saying to Shimon that if it weren't for your field in the middle, then I wouldn't have needed any fence in the middle anyway. If that field in the middle, if you were to sell me that field of yours, then I don't need a fence here anymore. Let's say to begin with, I own that field. Because your field is there, that requires me to have two fences, one on the inside and one on the outside, and therefore you can say there is a certain chosser over here. That's according to Rashi. Tosfos actually discusses that, no, we're not talking about the internal fence. We're talking about actually the external fence. We're talking about the fence that Reuven has to separate his field from other fields on other sides or to prevent wild animals from getting in or whatever. Fine, but he's saying the fact is that if your field wasn't in the middle and I had the same square footage in my field, then my field would be more compact and therefore I wouldn't need as large a fence. Like this, for example, consider, let's say Shimon's field is 100 by 100. Reuven's fields are also are 100 by 100 on each side of that. So now you have the total area of Reuven's is 300 by 300. It's 900 square feet. And that requires a fence around the whole 900, around the whole perimeter of 900. But if Shimon's field wasn't in the middle and Reuven had 800 in a square without anything in the middle of it, then he could get away with a smaller fence after all, because then you only have a perimeter of 800. So Reuven can argue, says Tosfos, not about the internal fence, but about the external fence. You're gaining from it, but I'm losing out a little bit because I could have, if your field hadn't been in the middle over there, I would have had a smaller fence. So you can't prove anything from that. Toshma, the Gemara says, Omer Rav Yosi, im Omer Nikif Fagodas Ravias, Rav Yosi continues in the mission over there, that if Shimon goes himself and fences in the fourth side, Megalgal and Olav HaSakol, then already we make him pay his fair share for the other three sides as well, because once he made the fourth side, he shows that he likes what Reuven did. He appreciates the fact that Reuven made that field, that fence on three sides, and now he's going and contributing the fourth side. So therefore we make him pay his share of the other three sides as well. So time of the God on Nikov. So what are we saying? Rav Yossi is saying only because Shimon put up that fourth side. Homakif Potter, implying that if Reuven had put up that fourth side, apparently Rav Yossi would say he's Potter. Shmamina Zenen was Alechoser Potter. So that would show that in this case you'd be Potter. And Tosfos adds, even the Chachamim are only saying, again, because like we said, you can say, Shimon, your field being in the middle causes me to have a larger fence than normal. But otherwise, if it was Zenen, it was Alei Chosser, it sounds like everybody would agree he's Potter. So the answer is Shiny Hossam. The difference is over there. De Amalei, because Reuven can say, on the other hand, L'didi Sagili B'netira Bar Zoza, fine. But on the other hand, as far as I'm concerned, we didn't need a stone wall over here, which cost more money to build. I would have been satisfied. We could have just put up a head, which cost a zuz to plant, and that would have been enough for me. You can't necessarily make me. Have to pay for my fair share of a stone wall. So, in other words, you can say, sorry, it's Shimon would say that. So, Shimon, you can say, gained a zuz that he would have had to put up something, but he just certainly shouldn't have to pay. He shouldn't necessarily have to pay. If Reuven put up the fourth side as well, Shimon shouldn't have to pay his fair share of all four sides, because he can say, there's no reason we need a stone wall here in the first place, from my point of view. Okay, so we'll continue tomorrow, Bez Hashem, with more proofs about this, and we'll continue about this din of Zen and of Zelech Chosser in this case, about Dor B'Chatzar Chaveh, right? Obviously, there are a lot of applications for it nowadays. Imagine, for example, somebody has a reserve, you have cases, a person has a reserved parking spot, and he's going to be out of town. Can somebody else use it without permission? Somebody has a seat he bought in Shul for Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, and then he turns out he ends up being away out of town. Can somebody else use his seat? There are all kinds of cases that all kinds of applications of this that you can have nowadays.